Okay, thank you everyone for coming to my session. This is my first talk at TechEd Europe, so go easy on me. I've brought my family, I think. Are they here? No, they're not here. They're too bored. All right, never mind. So my talk today is about modern architecture, so I have a bit of a promise that I hope that you will take away a few tips to help you have more maintainable solutions in the long term. So I guess software is all about shipping, and the first step is always to ship. But whether you can keep a solution going long term depends on how maintainable and how often you can continue to ship. And so this talk is about, you know, that second level. The first level is what the customer can see, or the feedback they can give on validation and the UI and stuff like that. And the second level is what is under the covers, which is often you get away with for a while. So this talk comes from, you know, my experience typically going into a company where they want you to give a bit of feedback on how the developers are going. And sometimes it's due to the fact that they have a lot of pain, and that pain can be attributed to different things, whether they're not having, essentially, you know, I've just taken a screenshot here of one that I did last week in Sydney, and that example was the business call me in and they say, look, we want a completely independent audit. We want you to check what the developers are doing. We want you to deliver to the stakeholders. We want you to review all the source code, all the architecture, and give us a clean bill of health. And we've had a couple of very bad incidents where we've had some downtime. We want you to tell us what the story is there. And we essentially, which I put at the bottom, but the whole reason I was there is because they hadn't shipped for 2 years. And that causes an awful lot of problems. Now, sometimes you haven't shipped for 6 months and it's just as painful. They had shipped pieces, but they hadn't shipped the main part. Now, I will just call out in this particular case, even though all they want to know is what is going on with the code, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about here. In this particular case, you could see that the code was very clean. You know, it was pretty obvious that they'd read Javal Lowy's book and they'd followed all the iDesign principles in the code. The code was pretty clean, and even though the business stakeholders thought it was all about the code, it was all about the communication between the teams. The business pretty much felt that IT spoke one language and IT didn't make a big effort or a very clear effort to dumb down the language that they were speaking. Furthermore, they didn't have the business setting priorities, and you know, IT took over and it all went downhill from there. So I will just, I'll just quickly show you that document just to get in some context. What I've done is I'll just give you a little bit of context here. I've just done a find and replace on their name to Northwind. I thought that was pretty safe. And it goes through and it talks about the process. So I'll just try to find a couple of bits and call them out. But looking through, the architecture was pretty clean. And we'll talk about a little bit of this as we go. The way that they were capturing requirements with storyboarding was pretty clean. Then you could have a look at, you know... Oh, sorry. I haven't switched. You're right. All right. Not used to these two monitor setups. Alrighty. Okay, so that's the real one. They look the same to me. And all I've done here is replace the word their company name with Northwind. And I've gone through and I'm just quickly giving you a bit of context where some of the points from this talk would end up going. And so I go through having a look at the architecture of everything. It looks pretty clean. You know, you've only got a few days to look at stuff they've been doing for many years. So I'm going to talk about some of the ways that you can hone in, like with a laser focus on some of the problems. And because you really want to at least work out whether you're going to be throwing away the code base or keeping the code base. Now, in this case, it covers some other things which you need for a well-rounded analysis. The way that they're taking their requirements and storyboarding, and the way I kind of do it is I look at it and I give a recommendation. So here is the code complexity, and we'll talk through that, but essentially there's certain numbers in here that matter, whether they're red, yellow or green, and as you can see it's pretty clean straight away with green, and we'll dive into that a bit later. And then in this case, session state, naming conventions, and it goes on and on. Okay, so that's the structure that I'm using, and I'm going to tell you how you find some of these things. Alrighty. All right, so here's how I've broken up the talk. I've broken it into three sections. The first things that I would look out for when I first turn up and the first questions you'll ask, and then some high-level tools, and then we'll go through all the stuff you do once the tools can't do any more, and you've got to do some real work and do some manual checking. All right, just a little about me. I'm from Sydney. I'm the chief architect at a Microsoft Gold partner there called SSW. We do mainly custom solutions. We're a Microsoft Gold partner. I'm one of three regional directors in Australia. I think we have... Can I get a show of hands? Is there any MVPs or regional directors here? Okay, all right, just a couple. We got any of the Microsoft team here watching me? No? Oh, you sure? Okay, great. All right, so I can whinge as much as I want. That's cool. All right, I just want to double check. Any Microsoft people here? Okay, all right, I'm clean. Good. All right. And my favorite qualification of all these things is I'm an MVP in a team. I've been around the different teams, the SharePoint and the CRM team. I'm now working fairly closely with the ALM team. That is Brian Harry's team and Cameron Skinner's team on the Visual Studio Ultimate. And I can tell you it's an absolute pleasure working with them. And although I've still got plenty more to whinge about. All right, that's my Twitter account. Outside of my company, well, I've had plenty of roles in the past, and I love being a Scrum Master, but my favorite role of all is I am now newly appointed as the soccer coach for my kids. And it's going very well. They hadn't won a single match the whole last year. They've now won two this year with the new coach. And I have been doing the planning up front. At halftime, we do a retrospective. And all the parents find it very amazing how I can get them to say, all right, so what was the worst thing that happened during that half? And what have we got to work on this half? It works beautifully. I can't believe it. Anyway, all right. Now, that's where I'm from. That is Bondi Beach. I am one beach down in Coogee Beach. If you haven't been to Sydney, it's very different to around here. We don't work as much as you guys, but the typical day is on the beach, drinking beer, you know, just relaxing. We get, you know, watch the kangaroos go past. And, you know, you get Wi-Fi on the beaches in Sydney, better than this conference, actually, so... So I'm just going to switch because I just want to take out 1 second of time to show you something. Where is my? Oh. I'm on Windows 8, so give me some. Let me go a little. All right, here we go.
G'day. I don't have a kangaroo for a pet. I don't wrestle with crocodiles. And I don't wear a cork hat. I fight wars, but never start wars. I would rather make peace. I can wear my country's flag with pride. I am a rock. I am the ocean. I am the island continent. My brothers are the Smiths, the Wilsons, the Santorellis, the Vicostis, the Wongs, and the Jagamaras. I play football without a helmet. I like beetroot on my hamburger. I ride in the front seat of a taxi. I believe this is a prawn, not a shrimp. I believe the world is round and Down Under is on top. I believe Australia is the best address on earth, and Australians brew the best beer on earth. Cheers.
All right. I will let you in on a little secret. Nobody in Australia actually drinks Foster's. We drink VB typically. We export all that crap. But it sells pretty well, so... All right, so let's go through the first things to look out for when you first turn up. And what I'd love to do is, I wouldn't mind just asking you guys very quickly, and if I can just switch back here. I'm using Windows 8, so I'm just trying to get to programs. I've worked out the quickest way. Yell out a few things that when you first turn up to a code base that you've never seen, that you would love to sort out. All right. So how many people here from Holland? Whoa, more than half. How many people here from Scandinavia? Oh, that looks like more than half again. Is Holland in Scandinavia? All right, I didn't realize. How many people from Eastern Europe? Okay. And Western Europe? Oh, all right, okay. I'm pretty confused. Maybe there seems to be 80% from Western Europe. All right, so any people from the UK here? Can I just see that? I just want to count how many bad evals I'm going to get. All right. Yeah, so if you didn't know, POMs, which we call them POMs, they don't typically like Australians very, very much, and I'm not exactly sure why, but I think it's something to do with they sent all their convicts to paradise, and they're still pissed off about it. So anyway, can I get a few things that you, the first things you'd start looking at on a code base, and some of the things that you hate to see? What, some pet hates? What? Dependencies, all right, yep. Commented out code, all right. No tests, thank you. What was that? Duplication of code. So you don't like copy and paste? Say again? Louder. Long methods, all right, long methods. Yep. Any others? Bad naming. All right, I'm going to tell you, in regards to naming, it ends up being so far down the list when you start reviewing code, you almost never get there. Inconsistency. What do you mean, sir? Inconsistency in what? Okay, so basically, he doesn't like it when he's got 50 developers and he sees 50 different ways of doing the same thing. So, all right. Yes, following standards. All right, I'll just put standards. All right, cool. Any others? Say again. Data objects. Dud objects. Oh, God objects. Oh, sorry. What country are you from? Ireland. No wonder I can't understand you. Okay. Okay. All right. I like the Dutch accent. It's very, like, I know there's an accent, but you can hear every word. I love the Dutch accent. It's my favorite. No, I'm not saying that because I'm in Holland. No. Any others? Ah, yes. No exception handling. Yep. Got any others? Bad architecture. That's pretty subjective. That's an easy... No architecture. All right. That's a... Can you be more specific? Okay. All right. I'll put no clean architecture with the layers. Yep. All right. Okay. We'll cover that. Any others? No. Up the back. What was that? All right. So no comments is another one. So I might just ask, how many people like comments, like seeing comments? Okay. Now this time you can only answer for one. Can I see a full show of hands? Because last time I got the same hands for the same questions. All right. Unless you live in lots of places. All right. That's about 80%. How many people hate seeing comments? All right. So I'm going to say that's 80 to 20. All right. I think the main reason people don't like comments is especially when they're misleading or that they're just explaining exactly what the code's doing. So we'll cover that. All right. That was commented out code or no comments. Okay. Any others? Yes, sir. Unremoved handlers. Okay. Any others? What was that? Oh, the build process. No build process. Is that, yep, all right. So, no build process. Yes, actually, I'm interested to know, and I've never seen this myself, how many people have ever gone into a company and seen that they once had a build server running continuously, and for some reason they've removed it? So there's a few hands, and that's interesting. Because I, you know, in Australia, I've never seen that, and I've been to a lot of companies. So I always thought that meant that there could never be a bad experience having a build server, but I've just learned in Europe there are a few cases that that you don't like all those early warnings. And yes, all right, never mind. You learn something every day. But yeah, that was something I was always very proud of, that, you know, people like continuous integration. And once they got it, they never chucked it out, except in Europe. Okay. All right. Any others? No design documentation. What design documentation are you after? You'll take anything. Any documentation you'll take. Depending on what? Oh, all right. So anything is better than none. Okay. All right. I'll run with that. Who likes plenty of documentation? Plenty of documentation. Okay. Who doesn't like a lot of documentation? All right. So that looks like it's 95% to zero. Okay. Just this one. Was it Kiwi? What country are you from? Holland. Oh, sorry. Gee, the accent is so good, I thought it was a Kiwi. Like, just a tiny twinge. Oh, you grew up in... Oh, right. There you go. All right. Very good. So, say again. About requirements. So, he's saying about requirements, not very clear. Right. All right. Well, I'm going to say that sounds like a very bad requirement that I'm not understanding. Okay. Any others? Assumptions. What's an assumption? Right. All right. So lots of code that just assuming we're in a perfect world, not checking for lots of things that are going wrong. Defensive coding, essentially. Yeah. All right. I'll jot that down as well. All right. All right, cool. That's pretty cool. Am I missing anything important? Louder. No unit tests. Oh, yeah, how do we do that? We just assume. Everybody does unit tests, don't we? All right. Oh, yeah, no tests. There we go. All right, I'll make it clear for that man. No unit tests. All right. Say again? I'll let the lady go first. There's a lady. No? No code reviews. All right. That's right. Code reviews. So manual, she's talking about manual code reviews. How many people have on a consistent, weekly basis code reviews in their project? So I'm going to say less than 20%, maybe. All right. Any others? Resource leaks. Is that right? Are you doing C++? No? Okay. Resource leaks. All right. Okay, that's enough. All right. So I think we'll see that we'll cover almost all of those. Okay, so the very first thing that I'll do before we get started, I know they want me to look at all the code and focus on that, but I like to ask a few questions very quickly. And those questions are about process. So I can get those out of the way. So the first thing I like to know is who's doing a lot of the UI. Sometimes I've had the situation where the developers go, we don't actually want you here. We aren't ready for anybody to read our code. We know it's a mess. We don't need any external person telling us it's a mess. We haven't done what we want to do. And if you have developers who are doing a lot of CSS and all the forms programming and all that stuff, there's a lot of usability stuff that just goes on and on and on, and that can really take away your focus on doing a clean middle tier. So I like to talk about the importance of having someone responsible for UI stuff, and don't, the guys that are in the middle tier, allow them to stay in the middle tier. Otherwise, you're going to have a pretty front and a mess underneath, the stuff that the customer can't see. Do you have a Scrum Master? I'm a big believer in Scrum. I think it's an awesome process, and I watch it at Microsoft, and it's very important. How many people here are following Scrum? Okay. How many people are doing Waterfall? Okay, so it looks like 80 to 5% or something. All right. Do you have continuous integration? Now, the holy grail is getting to continuous deployment, at least continuous deployment to the test server, but I think what you want to end up in the long term is continuous deployment to production. How many people have continuous deployment to test? Great. Wow, I've never seen that. That's over half the room. How many people have continuous deployment to production? Keep your hands up. All right, so 9 of this fairly large crowd. All right, that's not bad. All right, the other things that I talk about is having a schema master and a TFS master. Now, I should just ask first, who here is using TFS? Oh, wow. All right, I'm very impressed. So we've got 80% of the room, maybe more. Who's using Subversion? Okay, that's 0. Okay, that's good. Who's using Git? 3. Okay. Mercurial? All right. A few poor buggers. All right. So I will talk. My talk will all be about using TFS. And I think it's important to know who's looking after it. Sometimes people will say, we kind of all look after it. If that's the situation, then no one's looking after it. And I'm not talking about all the backups and stuff that IT guys will do, but I'm talking about, looking through it, inspecting, having a look at all the mess that's being generated on a daily basis, the check-in policies, the quality of the comments going in, that type of stuff, all the stuff you can look at and see how things are going. And I also believe in a schema master, and the schema master is someone who is responsible for what changes are happening to the database. Now, especially on a Scrum team, this is not called out, and I really think it should be, but you don't want all the developers being allowed to make changes to the database, and when we come to deployment, then we do a compare of the database. I think that's a broken process. I like it to go through a central person, usually the solution architect, and anybody can do all the stored procs or the or these schema changes, but they come through him for him to check it in and those changes get made. And the reason for that is you can't have the review later on schema changes, especially if what you're trying to do is aim for continuous deployment. All right. Now, the next thing, I just quickly ask, are they on the latest version of Visual Studio, of TFS? And usually they aren't, and you want to just know the reasons. All right. So then, from that point on, I want to know, are all the devs using the same set of add-ins? I just want to quickly go to a few of the machines and look at the add-ins and the extensions and see if they're the same. I think that they should be consistent throughout the team. All right. So the very first thing that I will do now, I've talked about that stuff, is we will do the first step. And the first step is get a fresh machine, not on the domain, and see if we can do a get latest and compile. Now, the client I just went to, we couldn't do that. Okay, and that was a pretty serious setup that they had, but it automatically generated all these proxies, and it certainly didn't work if you weren't on the domain. It's a bit of a mess. So the first thing I will do is I'll want to do a get latest, which you guys should do, just the first time experience for a dev, and then all the things that they start telling you, I want them in a document. And many people will say, read me, but I want it in a doc. I want to have screen captures where possible. And then I want to run the unit tests and see if they all work. And from that point on, I should see, at that point, all the integration tests failing. All right, so I should see the unit test passing, the integration test failing. And I'd want to see those steps in that document as well, okay, from beginning to end. All right, so that's where we'll be at now. Who can say they're at that point where you can do a get latest clean, follow a document, and you're good to go? Okay. So we've got about half of you. That's pretty good. So the other half, anybody got a better solution than that? Nope. All right. So the next thing I want to do is I want to know, how do I get this database created? I want it to be very simple and automatic. You can use OSQL, SQL command. We have a little tool. It's a free tool. It's called SQL Deploy, and it just runs all the scripts. Now, rerun the test now. They should all pass, all right? So if you want a gold star, you want it better than that. You can have it better than that. But you've got to put a focus on this from the beginning. So the streamline of a new development environment should check lots of little things, all dependencies, anything. And I believe that instead of that document, if you can, you should script all this with PowerShell. So I think in the perfect world, you should be able to do what I've just told you, but do it all within a minute. And the way you would do this, and this is kind of the way I like to see it done, is something like this. Setup-environment.powershell. Let's run that and see what it says. And if I need all these different things installed, let's just say I need infragistics and, you know, Telerik and all these different things installed. Well, with, you know, these different products need different things, and, you know, Azure needs certain things and folders need and permissions. I want it all done in a PowerShell script. I want everything that I need to be run. So what you'll see in this case, I've run this and I've got two problems. And this doesn't actually do anything. So the first thing, it basically just reports what's wrong. Now, if I was to run that again, but run it with dash fix, see the dash fix here? It would go ahead and do all the things that it could do. Install what it can do, set up what it can, and the things that cannot be done automatically, or it's going to cost too much to put this in the script, then they can, you know, open up a Word doc or do whatever. But that's kind of where you want to get to. So if I was to run that same thing again after I've run it once, this time, since one's fixed, I'll have one problem remaining, okay? And in that case, there's no automated fix for that. You've got to do it. But that's kind of where you want to get to. Rather than a long document telling you all the things you've got to do, put as much of this in a PowerShell script, all right? All right. All right, all good? Okay. So the next one is, can you check in and deploy? So I want to basically make a change, and I want to see what is the process to get what I've got now into production. I just want to get a little X, you know, one character in and see how it goes. And you go through the same process, and how do you get a gold star in this case? Okay. Well, we get a star if we can use PowerShell. And we've got to build, deploy, deploy to dev, test, production. All right? Who's got some setup like that where it's fairly scripted to get into production? Okay, so maybe 25% of the room. How do we get a gold star? That's just the star, because we really don't want devs deploying from their own machine. You know, devs can do pretty wild things. They can make changes directly on production. They can deploy stuff that hasn't even been checked in. Anyone seen any of this wild stuff? Okay. Maybe it only happens in Sydney, but never mind. This is like the gold star thing. And I've got this from a colleague, and I love this process. Basically, you've got a portal, and this is kind of a release portal, and you can see, you're on production now. Everything that's built is stamped with a version number. You can see since the last deployment that these work items were done. These change sets have happened, so it's pretty much continuous deployment here. If you want to know what the assemblies were, and there's not a very good reason to go and get them, but if you did want to get them, you could you can download them here. So there's not that manual process. It only really happens from this portal. The good thing about this is you don't have deployers deploying. So I think it's very important that the business are the ones that say it's tested, and the business press that button to put it in production. Okay? Because when it all goes pear-shaped, do you have that word here? Yes. So when it goes pear-shaped, you can say, well, you deployed it. It wasn't me. You should have tested it. All right. Okay. All right, who concurs with this advice? Okay. Who wants the TFS team to build us a portal automatically so it's all built for us? Yes. You tell them. Okay. All right. So the next thing that I would do when I've worked out the steps to, build it and deploy it, I start having a look down the right-hand side of the solution names. I just want to be able to read what the solutions are, see if they make sense. I have a little preference. I'll be interested to see if you guys agree with me. But I like to see it grouped into solution folders that have numbers. So I can clearly see these ones are in the UI, these ones are in the business, these ones are in the data, these are common, that style of thing. I have come across devs that don't want to put numbers in for some reason. They don't like the solution folders, but I think it makes things much clearer. All right. Who likes this advice? Okay. Half. Who doesn't like it? All right. About half. All right. Okay, so half of you, I've got to work on the other half. All right, good. Never mind. All right. So the next thing I want to get to before I get into the code is I want to see what documentation we have. All right? So this section is just for that one guy over there because I know the rest of you don't want any. Okay, so where's that Kiwi? There he is. All right. Kiwi, Dutch, whatever. All right. So reviewing the documentation, I'm going to say there's a couple of, I'm going to group into two styles. So the first style is what I would call the old school. Lots of documentation. I deal with plenty of outsourcing firms, and I would say in general when I deal with Indian teams, there's a lot of documentation. Okay, I have an office in China, and they definitely like getting documents that kind of tell them exactly what to do. The danger with documentation, because there's nothing really wrong with documentation, it's great to have planning up front and have some solution architect that will work it all out and tell you how it should be structured. What's the problem? Maintenance. Okay, in Scrum, what's it called? I thought you were all doing Scrum. What is out-of-date documentation called in Scrum? No? You're not really doing Scrum, are you? You just want to put Scrum on your resume. All right. So this is called technical debt. And if you have documentation in your project and it's not automatically generated, it's just referred to as technical debt. Scrum would tell you that what they want is you to create this document, and at the end of the sprint, you're meant to throw it out. That's the rules. Okay? I have trouble doing that because it seems like a waste of money, and I know, you know, there's a lot of Dutch in this room, and I've heard they don't like wasting money at all. So that's going to be really hard to chuck out that document. So essentially, you've got to have a process where it's always kept up to date. So that means that you need to put it kind of in your definition of done, where they are always being kept up to date, which becomes a real burden. So you've got these documents and UML, and here is an example, and you've got it in Dutch. Thanks, Marcel, I got this in Dutch for you. Doesn't make any sense to me. Even if it was in English, it wouldn't make much sense. But this is good because you're planning out what you're going to do. This is a good way of not having, crap from the start. This, you know, planning up front is good. The problems with it is you can't, we're a few sprints into this now, and chunks of this have been done, maybe slightly differently. And I can't see what's not done. So you really do want to have, you know, I would say, the stuff that's not done, at least in red. So that forces, as part of the, you know, every time you're touching this stuff, your definition of done is at least showing the things that are out of date in red. All right, so we've got use cases here. Nice Dutch. The problem with this stuff is clients can't read it. They never really understand this stuff. And then we've got just a couple of things. If you are using Enterprise Architect, which I know is very popular with architects, how many people here are using Enterprise Architect or have given it a go? Wow, that's awesome. Okay, so that's 30% of the room. And I'm going to tell you something I didn't even know. Marcel told me that they were from Australia. And I thought I knew everyone in Sydney. And I found out they're actually not from Sydney, which, of course, raises, like, if you don't know anything about Australia, you know that the intellectual capital is Sydney. And there is lots of problems from the south, okay, Melbourne. And they're actually not even from Melbourne. They're from outside of Melbourne, which makes it worse. And they're not even from, you know, where Ned Kelly got killed, you know, the Bendigo-style region. They're out from a tiny little two-bob town that, mosquitoes and flies don't even go to. So I couldn't believe it when Marcel told me. You know, I had to look it up where they were. So just if you are using that, just make sure that red is the unimplemented stuff. Make sure the date time is kept up to date and mark things as who's going to be doing what. All right. Anyway, that's the old school type of person. And the new school type of person is just to have a few docs. And I've just told you that the first couple that you can have, unless you're going to move to gold star treatment and get PowerShell, but at least instructions to compile, instructions to deploy. But I like to have a very brief business document in there. And that tells it's something that the product owner can read, and it explains a little about the system. And I'm talking minimum here. You're not going to believe how many projects I go into, and there's absolutely zero. And then I want to have another document, and that is what the devs use. You know, if there's certain patterns that they really care about, and they've agreed that this is what we will be using on this project, then I want to see it in the technologies. When I ask them questions and they tell me, oh yeah, we've kind of agreed on all these things, then I want to see it in that technologies. I want it to be kept up to date. So the new school is having a few documents, having some unit tests, and then it's the code and work items. So it would look something like this. You'd have some unit tests, and then it's the code. Actually, I will tell you, many developers are just as happy just to step through the code. They don't really need anything. The code is all their documentation. All right. But we have these things, the product backlog items. We have these things that we put in and we code against them and we close them. So I like the thinking that the product backlog items, we use check-in policies, and every check-in policy is forced to go against which one we're doing. If it's not there, we have to add it. And then we end up with this annotate view. How many people here use the annotate view on a regular basis? Okay, so we're a quarter of the room there. So I would encourage you all to use it, because we know almost the entire room is using TFS. So I would really encourage you to go for the integration with that. Now, there's one key thing. If you're going to check in and put it against the PBI, the product backlog item, if you are thinking of this as being part of the documentation, the worst thing we can have is comments that are out of date, right? We know when we read code, and we've all read comments, and we're reading the comment, and then we're reading the code, and we're now confused because we think the code is doing what the comment says. And then you kind of get out of kilter, and then you realize the comment's, you know, out of date. Most people don't care anything about PBIs, and they just close them because I've done it. Even if I did it differently, even if I went and had a conversation with the product owner and we agreed that the way that the user story or the PBI is written is different to what we've gone ahead and implemented, then we will have, most people won't even update them. And I find this continually. So I think that part of your definition of done is to check that the PBI is still correct. And so what I like to do is strike through the acceptance criteria that was originally specified and update that to what it is now, because we're going to be using this as our commenting, as our documentation, so we don't have to have big amounts of documentation. All right. How many people have any questions or any problems with that? Because it's not something I see around. All right, then I'm going to have a vote. Who is this guy? Marcel? Yeah, I knew he'd have his hand up. Just Marcel. Come on. Is there anyone else? All right. Who is this guy? All right. Who doesn't care anything about documentation? I don't care whether there is or isn't. All right. So we've gone through and we've had a look at the core things that you look at up front. Now we're going to get into the code. We're finally going to get into the code, and we've done plenty of talking. All right, so here is what we're at now. And I'm going to talk now about architecture tools, code analysis tools, and code metrics. All right, so let me just switch over here. All right. So the Netherlands was very different to what I expected. Like, I know that you guys are fairly naughty with all your drugs and your your red light districts and stuff, which I've gone and checked it out. It is as described. But what do you think I love most about Holland? Can you guess, like, from a foreigner, what would you be really surprised about? No Vegemite. That's right. That's all right. I brought with me some Vegemite. What? No what? No can do. Oh, no kangaroos. No, I knew there'd be no kangaroos. Yep. Any other? The what? The buildings, yeah. They're nice, really nice. Bicycles, that's the real thing that got me. Because I'm still in shock every time I walk to the convention center every morning. Like, in Sydney, to have a bicycle, which is pretty rare, because you essentially need to be an elite athlete, because there's really steep hills, and you have to be pretty loaded, because the bikes that they sell in Sydney, most of them are $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. They're expensive bikes, so they need to be super light and stuff. And you have to be pretty much crazy, because you have to ride on the road with the 100 kilometre an hour car. And actually, Sydney drivers don't have any respect for bikes. So, like, they shouldn't be on. So instead of just toot them, they just push you over, okay? So, okay, it is pretty, it's pretty incredible to see the amount of, like, no wonder everyone's thin over here. Like, you just have to, everyone's riding them. I was so shocked. Anyway, so moving on. So let's have a look here. Here's the solution. So the first thing that we would do is I'd go in and I'd create a dependency graph, and we'll have a look here. And this goes through and analyzes all this. And This is great to be having a conversation with the devs as you're going. So I will typically have a look at this on the projector with the guys, and we just start talking, and you're looking for bad relationships. So I'll just get rid of this guy, and I always get rid of these externals. It's not very easy to find how to get rid of it in the menu here, so you just press delete. And then I want kind of my web stuff up, or my UI stuff up here. And I'll put my data access down here. And then I start looking for problems. And now I've got, and I'm actually pretty keen first off to get rid of common stuff that's used everywhere. So I'm just looking for the Now this isn't my project. I'm actually just looking through one that I just downloaded. It's a real one. So you can see everything's referencing the models here. Now, the first thing I'll do is I'll just try to find the tests. There's the tests, so I'll get rid of those tests. And the tests themselves, that's probably all right. You've got tests that are calling the models in the business. It's a bit of a question mark. I'll just ask about that, but I'm just going to ditch that. We've got the tests here for the integration. So these are integration tests. So integration tests can be calling everything, so that's fine. I'll kill that too. And then we've got the tests on the business, so I'll kill that. That looks okay. We've got security. I'm still just trying to get rid of the tests at the moment. So you'll notice that models are being used by lots of things. I don't care whether everything's calling the models, that's fine, so I'll just kill that as well. So I'm just looking for problems. And here we have business. We've got common, so now I've just noticed something. There seems to be, see this common? It doesn't even have a link to the unit test. So what I can tell you is my first impression of this being as per the standard we have in our company is pretty good. But I saw a lot of these tests, and it's only from within here that I can see straight away that these tests here have no relationship, and so they've just made the projects and they haven't put in unit tests. Now, I'd discover that later as well when we're looking at the unit test coverage, but that is the first thing. And so at that point in time, I would probably just take a screen capture of this. And, well, I'd just do something like that. And I'd say, I want that fixed. And I would make, come in here, and I would make a new product backlog item. And in here, we've got beautiful screen captures. Thank goodness, that only took 3 versions. But we have this, and this would be to improve, add some unit tests. Okay? And so that's kind of how I would go through that. And so then I ditch that because I've reported that. Now, I don't mind if lots of things are calling common, so I'll ditch that as well. We've got security here. And I've got another problem. So I've just noticed I've got the same problem here. It seems to be a pattern in this project. And I would take another screen capture of that and put that as a new product backlog item. And now I'm going to kill that after reporting it. Security is calling the web and the data access. I think it's okay. I'd have the conversation with the devs and say, look, you're calling the security from lots of different places. That's probably fine. I'll get rid of these tests. That's fine. And yeah, this is just kind of the process that I would keep going through until I've deleted the whole thing. So we've got another one here, the data access, no tests. These, I'll kill those. So I would have reported that one. We've got more. This is the integration. Integration is calling lots of different things. That's fine. And as you can see, I can kill that. And I'm down to here. And you can see that the web, anyone got a problem with that one? Yeah. So this is the style. So now we take a screen capture of that and say, why is the UI calling data access directly instead of going through business? And this is the style of thing that you can do. All right? So that's it. Any questions on that? Good. So, back to the PowerPoint. All right. So the first thing is look at the architecture. Now, we've got a couple of things. We've got that dependency graph, which I just showed you. Now, that's only an ultimate edition. That's only for rich people. So, but I know Holland is a wealthy country, but they don't like spending money. So maybe you might not have the ultimate edition. So then you have a choice to use the end-depend. It's from a French dude. It's just a single guy, but he has a similar type of functionality. It's not as clean. It's not as nice. But you can do that. It's got some other cool things I'll show you in a sec. Anyone used end-depend here? Oh, good. Okay, so we've got 10% of the room had a go at that. Who actually uses the dependency graph fairly regularly? Just a few. All right. So that's the dependency graph, and this is what we have. I have a dream, actually. I hope one day that if everybody listens to me and we structure it like this, which, half the room is going to, then instead of getting, a mess like this, that the Visual Studio team will automatically just generate it like that. So it's already put in all its order. Okay? All right, you can tell the team that you subscribe to that and you want that feature. Okay. His name's Cameron Skinner. All right. So, as I said, you put all the things you keep finding inside work item or PBIs. Okay. So let me just switch over and I'll show you the other tool which also exists. And that is this end-depend. And this end-depend, you can analyze a solution. Now, this is French, so there's going to be a few odd things, as you would expect. So you choose the solution. Even though I'm in the current solution, you will see this OK button. It actually means next. And then this one means all, actually, even though it's asking you to select one, it means all. You just ignore that, and it will go forward. It won't respect any of your window placements from prior times, and it opens up weird things, like it opens up browsers, and then I click on this because this actually takes the foreground. And when you click this, we've just lost what was in the browser. So then you go back to the browser, which got opened in the background, and you can have a look here, and it's got the dependency graph. As a minimum, even if you don't understand what any of this does, it looks impressive to clients, so just run it anyway. It looks like you've done some real analysis here. Okay. You've got some really cool things here. Now, I'll come back to this one, but this is like a web view of all this stuff. Now, it's not that useful at this point in time. We'll have a look at this, but this basically looks at, abstractness versus instability. As a minimum, there's a lot of learning things that you'll do because his documentation is pretty cool and nifty. His UI is pretty horrible. You'll see there's colours everywhere. I'm guessing he's fairly young. He likes lots of colours. But what we're looking for right now is the red. See the red? And in this particular case that I've picked, I could have picked a better solution. I could have picked a worse solution. I've picked a solution from our company where they're pretty senior guys on it. But unfortunately, these are all zeros. But what I would have done is gone into one of these where the red is greater than zero. All right, so then you would go in there and you can see all this. This is all from the web UI. So I'll just lose that. Now, you've got this dependency graph, which is very similar to what I showed you, but it's not as usable as what I just showed you. And it's a bit of a mess. It's got all the layers underneath. All right, but don't worry about that. I don't use that one. But what they do have is some other cool things in here. Well, actually, there is this thing called a rule. What is it? Rule and explore. The way you find this thing is you look in the bottom right-hand corner. See this guy? And if you click that little red dot, we're into this rules and query explorer. Now, don't get too frightened. As soon as you click things, things happen, So we're looking for red here, and you can see that there's types are too critical. So types are too big, and this is a pretty bad one. So this is a way of getting around. So in this case, you will see that he's using this style of thing called link. Well, it's a link style thing. I think he calls it code quality link. He's built his own link. So if I want the number of lines and I want that to be, look, 50 is a bit out of control, it'd probably be closer to 500. And they're the two worst ones, okay? At least now, because what you don't want to do is have your developers drowning in millions of problems. So if we can just modify these things so that they're justifying just to cut the worst. And this is the best thing about this. It allows you to change what you're looking for just to get just a handful of things. There is no point running code analysis, turning lots of the warnings on, and giving them a million things to fix. So here we have methods too complex is all good. So you can see there's nothing's being turned up here. I've got lots of things here. There's 29. Now I can change that by making that has to be, 60. Oops. Okay, and now it's 28. I should make that 600. Okay. All right, and you've got that style working. Now it gets actually better than doing this. You can go end depends, and you've got this metrics. Now what do you call this type of graph? Anyone know? What do you call this type of thing? It's got a name, doesn't it? This type of graph, does it have some type of name? Heat map. Tree map. All right, tree map. There you go. So this tree map, what is good about it is you can go along here and start saying, all right, quickly, tell me all the methods that need refactoring. And I'll just hide this. And I know this, all right, I need that bigger. But anyway, you get the idea. Now, you can see all the blue up there? The blue, blue in France means red, all right? So just imagine that blue means bad, all right? I actually did email him, and I said, why don't you use red for the worst and yellow for the second worst? Why do you choose blue? And his answer was, because it's not red or yellow. So there was obviously a translation problem there. But he is pretty responsive, except to UI suggestions. He's right deep into all the calculations of how this is done. So the easiest way to look at this is say, for each one of these, the blue is the cancer. And even though I said get away, this thing keeps coming. Do you know how I complained about that? It keeps coming back. I'll just make it smaller. So that's the cancer for that. You want to know where all the methods too complex are in this. And when you start seeing a lot of problems in certain assemblies, that are being outsourced, well, then you know that we need to keep, whipping them. All right? So as you will go through this, you'll see where your cancers lie in the different areas. It's really handy to go through that. All right. Anyway, back to my PowerPoints. All right, so don't use that dependency graph unless you can't afford Ultimate. All right, I should have told you that as well, but never mind. See, if you click on one of these things, actually I will go back and show you because it is pretty cool. If you click on one of these things, when you want that thing on the right to pop open, it won't pop open. So now, how do I? I think I have to do some hoops here. I have to pin the description to info view, then it will open. Because otherwise, here's the problem: if you want to look at this, then it will keep changing as you hover past them. So anyway, so what you do is we have this pin on, otherwise you'll have problems. And then let's just say you want to know. I'll go to a bad one. So methods too complex. Then I know that the blue is the cancer, so I'll just click on that cancer there. And then I can start looking over here. Do I have to sync that? All right, it's not the easiest UI. But anyway, you come over here and you will learn things. You click on this, it will explain to you exactly what all these things are. Basically higher than 20, it's going to be hard to maintain. And he has really good explanations. So it's a great learning tool as a miniman. All right. All right, now what I do want you to be aware of is that this isn't a daily tool. This isn't a tool that devs are going to use as they're writing code and checking things. This is just one of those tools that you would use in maybe just before the sprint planning, sprint review meeting, where you start pulling up a few things so that you can see if anything needs to be added into the backlog. All right. So let's talk about the code analysis tools. So anybody using the code analysis tools? Okay, so we've got 30-40%. Okay, so if you want to get your code clean with tools, the first thing is to get ReSharper and basically get all the rules to green. Then you want to get all your code analysis rules to on. Then you want to turn all the rules on after you've got those right. Then you want to get StyleCop and turn on the rules on for that. And we've got a tool ourselves which analyzes the source code, a bit like StyleCop, but has a lot of UI rules. And get all those turned on. And now you get them all to zero and you have clean code, right? Okay, who's doing that? Nobody. I thought Europe was all about quality. Okay. Well, that's good, because there's no liars in the room. Okay, that means all my prior answers were correct. So there's a very bad reason that you can't do this. Okay, what's the bad reason? You need to ship. You need to ship, but don't you want to ship quality? Too much noise. Yeah, well, that means your code's too bad, isn't it? Not necessarily. Okay. Who would love their code to be zero with all this stuff? Just three people care about quality in this room. That's depressing. Never mind. Okay. Here's the problem. You will end up drowning your developers in a sea of problems. And they really can't get far when they've got thousands. Like, you can easily get 30,000 of these warnings popping up that you have to get. And from that point on, you will either have a problem where they keep ignoring you, and then you're not a very effective solution architect, and you give up, and they ignore you. That's just a picture of me. or you can whip them. Okay, this is my favorite thing. So you keep beating it, and you keep pushing them. Keep those rules on, keep pushing them, keep telling them that they're shipping stuff, but it's crap, and that they still need to get all those warnings to zero. This will work for a while. They'll talk about you behind your back. Then they'll eventually start Googling. Keep this up enough, and then they will get their guts and tell you. All right, so that's exactly what you don't want to do. So what you want... The method of doing this is you want to go through and use the campsite rule. Who follows the campsite rule? You go camping in this country? It's not very much space to go camping, I guess. But so essentially, the campsite rule is if I go in and ReSharper has some warnings, the stuff that I'm touching, I don't actually have to get ReSharper to green, which I should, but I should have less than when I first got into the file every time. And that's the method that you want to use. Code analysis. I want to, on each sprint, I want to have less. I want it to be going in the right direction. Okay? So turn on the default settings for sure. And that should be the first goal, to get the default settings to zero. But from that point on, it's not an or, it's a custom. So you go through and get the custom stuff. And then it's style cop. And then it's custom style cop. Keep adding more and more as we can in, and our code will keep getting cleaner, but it must be via the custom method. All right, code or same thing, custom. All right, so then I want to see a document in that project, and I want to see the reasons that they're turned on or off, okay? Or turned off. You turn them off, I want to see the reason. All right, so there's ReSharper. You'll see all those warnings up in the top right-hand corner, 63 errors and warnings. Then it's the custom stuff, and you go into this inspection severity, and that's where you start looking at what you can make as warnings or errors. And then it's code analysis. We run code analysis. and then we see all these problems, and then it's custom. So let's go and have a quick look at these things. So, all right. So the first thing that we will do in here, well, we can go to a file. I'll go to Bootstrapper. I'll go into one of these. And you'll see that we have some little warnings here. And we want to basically, or we want this to end up to green. And that should be the general goal if you're touching this file. But it shouldn't be an absolute must. It should be just less than when you first got it. And then it's the, you go into the options and you look at the inspection severity here. And that's what you want to work with, these guys, as you go. Keep improving. Now, the same thing with code analysis. With code analysis, you go into the Analyze menu and you run code analysis on the solution. And by default, you want just to have the minimum rules on. Anyone who here has zero just to the default minimum rules in their project? Okay, just a handful, maybe a dozen. All right. So, here we got one straight away, a SQL. And I'd be very surprised if the guys on this project knew about this, but they have they got a SQL injection one, okay? So I can tell you straight away they're not running this. Okay, there'll be some, I'll have some words with them later. So, but that's the style. And so you go through, if you wanted to, you can go SQL or, and then from that point on, well, that's one that we really want to do. We need to now work out what we're going to do with that. So we can create a work item, task, bug, impediment, product backlog item. So this, when I see this, I really need to put it on, I need to really put it in. I should ask you guys, who would make this a task? Well, I'm going to assume it's task, bug, or PBI. Who would put this in as a task? You have to answer one of these questions. In as a task. Okay. So, task. Keep your hand up for task. All right. It's less than a third. All right. Who would go for a bug? Wow. That's most. That's over 60%. Who would go for PBI? Just 6, 7. That's not very many. All right. So almost, I guess there was a few that didn't vote. But that's funny because I wouldn't put that in as a bug. A bug to me has to be, it depends on what the team define it as. But a bug for me, we don't like using the word bug because, bug is, you can end up doing for free for customers. And a bug has a real bad connotation. Now, I would say that a bug is when code crashes or code is different from the documentation. This might not cause any problems, and if it's not reported by a customer, I would have trouble calling this a bug. I would actually call it a PBI. So I would copy that. And I would call it a PBI. That's really interesting. It's really interesting that there's only 6 people that were correct in the whole room. So what you'll find is that is something that I would want fixed. I have a dream one day. You know how we have IntelliTrace files? We saw Marcel's session the other day on IntelliTrace, which is the crown jewel of Visual Studio. I have a dream that one day that only when there is an IntelliTrace file, that is a bug, because it's very easy to reproduce and get to that point. And so that'll be something, a bug has to be reproduced. It's fixed via IntelliTrace. And then these type of thing is just really a code cleanup, okay? These were fine for years. All right, anyway, be aware of that. And for some reason, I have no idea why, but if you want that text there, it's put onto the history tab. So for some reason, you have to now cut that and put it over here. If someone can tell me the reason for that, I would be very happy. But that is where I want that text. All right? So that's how we go with that. All right. Moving along. Did I cover that? All right. So we've done the code analysis. And from that point on, you now want to start putting those guys into a custom rule set. So we start with the minimum recommended ones. And then what you don't want to do is just go to all rules. You want to end up with your own custom one. You would think there'd be an add menu here, wouldn't you? Or there'd be some way here of adding a rule set. Well, you'll be disappointed that you can't, because they only want smart people to be able to add rule sets. So you actually have to then go to the business. You have to come over all the way over here, and you have to... Where's my properties? Oh, sorry. I have to go to the actual project and go to properties. This is not meant to be easy. It's by design to make it hard. And if you look here, we have code analysis. And all we're trying to do now is make our own, our own rule set. And there's no create a new one here, unfortunately. So they don't want it to be very easy to create a new one. So we come into here. And in here, there's still no create new rule set. So what you have to do is you have to know to come over the properties down here. And you give this a new name, okay? So that's... Anyway, we won't... But you can do it, okay? And you know who are the cool engineers, because they've actually worked out how to make their own rule sets. Okay. So let's come back here. All right. So the next thing is, if you're going to suppress it, are you going to suppress it in the source or in the source code? Like if we decide to suppress that rule, which you will do if you're going to work with this, are you going to suppress it in the source file or in the suppression file? Do you like it being in the code so you can see it, or do you want it hidden away into some suppression file? Who goes for put exceptions into the source? Okay. Most. Who says put it in a suppression file? Okay. So I'm going to say that's 80 to 20. So my general thinking around this is it can be both. And so... If it's no good, if the rule is no good, it should be removed from the rule set and it wouldn't be in your custom rule set. If it's not applicable in this specific case because we've looked at it, then it should be in the suppression file. But if the rule is actually valid, but in this case I'm overriding it because I'm lazy or I don't have time, but I know that it's something that can't be there long term, then it should be in the code. That's kind of my thinking of how that works. Sorry, what was the question? So don't they get lost in the suppression file? It's very good. Yeah. Well, they can't get lost in the code file because you're always looking at it. Right, so if they're in the suppression file, sir, they can get lost, but they don't regularly get added in there, and you have annotate. So the only people really doing those should be the senior guys on the team. And you would have the solution architect reviewing which senior members are adding that in. So they don't become as invisible as you would think if the thinking is as I've just described it. Okay? Because it's not very common that you'll be doing that. So, how do you go ahead and create these work items? Well, you can just select the whole group and throw them in, or you can just select one at a time. Now, in Australia, we don't like working too hard, so we just do one at a time. So I'll just show you what I'm talking about there. All right. So and then we go through StyleCop and Code Auditor. Now I want to jump ahead to. All right. So I just want to talk about these code review tools. So right now, the code review tools mean that what will happen is that without them today, developers essentially check things in. And then we go through this stage of code reviewing. What you don't want to do is have that situation, because if you have that situation then you can never really get to the holy grail of continuous deployment. Now, what you want to do is use these new code review tools in 2012, because what it does is it teaches the junior developers, or the guys that think it's working but they're not sure, to ask a senior to check whether this works. And it's beautiful, especially for outsourcing. Obviously, if you're all in one room, this is going to have less value. So here's the scenario. You know, Mark's not sure whether he's just done this code right. He's just come from DNN. He's trying to do Razor code, so he checks in anyway. If he's in 2012, basically what he's going to do is he's going to come here to this My Work tab, and then he's going to request a review. He's going to enter the name of the guys. Let's just say it's a regex. He'd enter the name of the regex guys, ask them to press submit, and then the cool guy with the dark theme, he's going to get this, and it's going to just show up in his My Work hub. That's called a hub on the right-hand side. Then he's going to see what was done, what work items and what files were modified in this check-in. Have a look there. Look through here. It'll show the change code. Then he'll, you know, he can look at it different ways, all different ways. And then this is the magic. He right-clicks and goes add comment, just like in Word. And then he will say, why have you done this and that? You know, just whinging. And this will be great for UK guys. They will be able to really be at home. And then he finally decides whether he wants to, whether it looks good or not. And then it goes back to the original coder. And the coder will say, he'll have something pop up in his thing here. And he will then click on each one. And he'll see what happened. And then he'll tick them off as he goes, and then he'll say complete. So that's the process. It's not a very hard process. It's working really well for us in our office. I will tell you that it's not... Today, it works beautiful because a developer chooses whether he wants his source code reviewed. This is much better than just trying to randomly review everything. Okay? This is a lot more targeted, and it really helps communication. It's not where I'd like it to be. This is where I'd like it to be. I'd like it, like when I'm a reviewer, I like to say I haven't touched any of your code. But this is not going to work in that scenario today. So, you know, I want to just be able to add comments without touching code. And then I'd like it to tell me who's making this dodgy code. Like, I want it to automatically look up annotate, and it creates the code review work items for me. That's one for 2014 or something. And that's where I hope it gets to. But it's a great... It's a great start. So with that, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank a couple of people in my office, Eric and Adam, who are awesome architects. I also want to thank Marcel and TJ. We have if you Google SSWTV architecture code reviews, you'll see a long interview of the three of us going through doing this review on some code, and on this day, none of us had ever worked together. So we just kind of went through a new code base, and we had someone from Norway, someone from Holland, someone from Australia going through, and it's amazing how similar we came up with ideas. And then you've got this rules page that goes through all those things. So I want to say that I wanted to tell you one more thing, just about Holland. And I saw a 70-year-old lady riding on a bike, and I thought that was unbelievable. It was very, very surprising. And I saw that you don't use helmets, which I thought was really surprising. But the thing that I still haven't got a handle on, you want to know the most surprising thing? When I saw all those bikes locked up, none of the bikes could be worth more than 50 or 100 euros, could they? And you lock them all up. That was bizarre. But anyway, and I have a tip. I think you should get rid of the motorcyclists off the bike paths. What are they doing on the bike paths? Shouldn't they be on the road? Anyway. All right. So we've finished that. I went through kind of the tools that you use the first things that you do in the very beginning, then the tools that you use, and then all the manual checking that you do. So last couple of things, if you do your evals, that'd be really appreciated. I'm happy to receive any emails. Just put a really good subject, like attended Tech Ed Europe or something, and I'll get back to you. I get a lot of email. Plus, I'd love to know the good tips or tips that I missed. That would be awesome. If you're coming to Sydney, I run the Sydney user group there. Sing out. Thank you, guys.